BBC News with David Ryder. Huge waves triggered by a massive underwater earthquake off Indonesia have swept across the Indian Ocean, crashing onto coastlines from Indonesia and Thailand to India, Sri Lanka, and even as far away as Somalia. It's already known that more than 11,000 people have died. As well as Indonesia itself, the worst affected areas were Sri Lanka and southern India. Indonesian officials say more than 4,000 people have been killed in Sumatra, but there's little detailed news so far, as virtually all transport and communication links were wrecked. Figures from the government and the Tamil Tiger rebels in Sri Lanka say at least 3,500 people died as coastal areas were swamped, while in southern India the number has risen above 2,000, with hundreds more fishermen missing. Low-lying Indian Ocean island chains, including the Maldives, Andamans and Seychelles, were inundated, while hundreds of deaths were reported in Thailand and several dozen in Malaysia. The Red Cross has issued what it says is an immediate and initial appeal for relief aid, and a number of governments have already offered assistance.
You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Julian Marshall with NewsHour. The Indian Ocean earthquake is known to have killed more than 11,000 people, but the number of reported dead is bound to rise given the remoteness of many of the areas affected. But could the figure have been much lower if warnings had been given of the earthquake itself, and once it had happened, of the danger of those seismic sea waves or tsunamis that have claimed most of the lives? Indonesia, the epicentre of the underwater earthquake, is prone to seismic upheaval because of its location on the margins of tectonic plates that make up the so-called Ring of Fire around the Pacific Ocean basin. But unlike the Pacific, no such tsunami early warning system exists for the Indian Ocean. The earthquake and tidal waves that have caused destruction around the Indian Ocean, emails have been coming into our website throughout the day. NewsHour's Jatinder Sidhu has been looking at some of them. Jatinder.
Yes, there's a huge number of emails from a number of eyewitnesses in right across the region. Here's one from Ali in Male on the Maldives. He says Male is protected by a special artificial barrier, and yet it's still flooded and destroyed. The other islands have no protection. We fear there may be thousands dead, including fishermen and divers. Sudarshan writes from Madras in southern India. I live 3 kilometres from the beach, he says. The most basic fear in our minds is whether there might be any more repeats of the tidal wave. We're absolutely clueless, he says.
Jatinder Sidhu, many thanks. Keep those emails coming. newshour@bbc.co.uk. BBC World Service, this is Julian Marshall with NewsHour. Coming up in the next 60 minutes, a powerful earthquake off the coast of Indonesia triggers tidal waves across the Indian Ocean. Thousands are dead and missing.
Most of them who lost their lives were women and children who could not get away from the invading floods.
India bears the brunt, along with Indonesia itself and Sri Lanka, where the president has declared a national disaster.
It is the worst disaster the country has suffered in terms of loss of life, injury to humans.
BBC News with Marion Marshall. More than 11,000 people are now known to have been killed by a massive earthquake and resulting tidal waves, which devastated coastal areas around the Indian Ocean. The worst affected areas are Indonesia, Sri Lanka and southern India, with entire villages destroyed and people swept away. Matthew Grant reports from Madras in southern India.
Police have recovered hundreds of bodies from the city and along the coast. Others have been washed ashore. Some were thrown into lorries, while others were carried to hospital on carts or in sacks. It's now dark in Madras, and most of the water's gone back out to sea. But along the coast, there's still signs of devastation. Many of the roads there are closed and strewn with debris. Some of the shanty towns by the beaches are completely destroyed. And out to sea, hundreds of fishermen are still believed to be missing.
The earthquake, centred off the Indonesian island of Sumatra, measured 8.9 on the Richter scale, making it the worst anywhere in the world for 40 years. The Indonesian Health Ministry says more than 4,000 people are now known to have died on Sumatra. Most of them are believed to be in the province of Aceh. The Indonesian Vice President, Yusuf Kawa, said efforts were underway to reach areas cut off by the disaster.
We still don't know what's happening there because of a lack of communication. We're sending our two top ministers to Aceh right now to access the latest situation. After that, we'll see what to do next. We're also preparing food supplies, medicines and makeshift shelters as emergency backup.
The Indian government has dispatched warships and aircraft carrying medicine and food to its southern coasts and to Sri Lanka, where more than 4,000 people are now reported dead. From the country's capital, Colombo, here's Gina Wilkinson.
In some of the worst-hit areas on Sri Lanka's east coast, towering waves travelled more than 2 kilometres inland, sweeping away villages and fishing communities. There are many casualties along the southern coast too. Police in the town of Matara say many elderly people and children were among those pulled out to sea when huge waves hit a weekend market. A military spokesman says every member of Sri Lanka's 200,000-strong army, navy and air force has been ordered to report for duty to support the massive search and rescue effort.
The tsunamis generated by the earthquake also struck neighbouring Thailand and Malaysia. Worst affected were a number of West Coast tourist resorts, including Phuket and the surrounding islands in Thailand. Government officials there said more than 300 people had died. Chris Hogg reports from Bangkok.
One of the biggest problems for the rescue services in Phuket, now night has fallen, is the lack of power. Many electricity lines were torn down by the wall of water that crashed into the island. The streets of the main town Patong are strewn with debris. The island's governor says more than 200 people are missing, most of them tourists. The authorities are still trying to find accommodation for the foreign visitors who were taken to higher ground for safety earlier in the day. Many tourists are now waiting at the airport, trying to get a flight off the island. Diplomats from 13 different nations are heading for Phuket to offer help.
Governments have declared national disasters and appealed for international help. The Red Cross has issued what it called an initial and immediate appeal for more than $6 million to help alleviate the effects of the earthquake and tidal waves. You're listening to the news from the BBC.
Some 20 hours ago, an earthquake measuring 8.9 on the Richter scale, that's one of the most powerful in the past century, rocked the Indian Ocean floor off the Indonesian island of Sumatra. Within hours, massive waves were crashing ashore in Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia and Sri Lanka, and as far away as India and the Maldive Islands. The number of reported dead continues to rise. It now stands at well over 11,000, and there's been widespread devastation of property. We hear first from NewsHour's Nicholas Walton.
This was no normal earthquake. Its size meant that it alone would have been devastating. But it was the shock waves travelling through the waters of the Indian Ocean that turned a local disaster into one covering thousands of kilometres. Andy Johnstone is a journalist with the Phuket Gazette, across the Andaman Sea in Thailand.
Around 8 o'clock, there was just people down on the beach, and then people saw the sea recede very quickly, which caused some concern, and everyone apparently stood up and watched what was happening. And then within seconds, it came back in very, very fast and didn't stop. That was where the initial round of injuries and devastation was caused. About an hour later, when the second major wave hit, there were other surges in between this. People had actually gone down to go and have a look at what had happened, and then it all happened again.
The earthquake had set off a tidal wave called a tsunami that travelled across the Indian Ocean towards Sri Lanka and southern India, where it hit home, smashing the coastline, sweeping away people and buildings. One fisherman from Madras described how the wave came after he had felt earth tremors from the quake itself.
After the earthquake, when we were sitting in our home, suddenly a big wave came. It was so big that people who were near the sea had no chance to survive. It was with big force. Many children who were playing at that time died. A lot of old people have died. Around 10 children who were playing at the beach are missing.
The low-lying islands of the Maldives, more than 2,500 kilometres from Indonesia, were hit badly. But the eastern coast of the island of Sri Lanka was one of the areas where the tsunami caused most destruction. One BBC correspondent, Roland Burke, was on holiday in Moratuwa, in the south of the island, when it was struck by the tsunami.
Suddenly water was coming under the door. We leapt for the door. As we did so, the windows caved in, and suddenly we're out in the corridor, neck deep in water, fighting our way to the restaurant with the tables and chairs all crashing around us. We climbed up into a tree. Stayed there for about 30 seconds, but that couldn't stand up to the incredible force of the water coming in. The tree came down, and we were then back in the water, trying to keep our heads above it, being washed along in a muddy torrent full of refrigerators and cars and bikes and roofs and bits of wall and other people, and we were carried along like that for about 300 metres inland.
BBC correspondent Roland Burke in Sri Lanka, ending that report from NewsHour's Nicholas Walton. Well, among the worst affected areas is the province of Aceh, on the northern tip of the Indonesian island of Sumatra and closest to the epicentre of the Indian Ocean earthquake. The Indonesian authorities are putting the number of dead in the provincial capital, Bandar Aceh, alone at around 3,000. The province has been virtually sealed off for the past 18 months because of a conflict between government forces and rebels, and communications have been further disrupted by the quake. I asked our correspondent, Rachel Harvey, in the capital, Jakarta, what she'd been able to find out.
As the day has gone on, the picture is becoming increasingly grim. For many, many hours, we weren't getting much information from the province of Aceh at all. In the past few hours, though, a clearer picture is emerging. We're now talking about at least, I think, 2,000 people dead, and the authorities are warning that that figure could continue to rise. There are still, we're told, some areas in the province that no one's been able to make contact with at all, and I think that's why people are worried that the casualty figure may yet rise further. The infrastructure, which was never particularly great in Aceh, that has now been absolutely devastated. The provincial airport is unusable because the tower has been damaged and the runway's been flooded. Some of the major roads have also are now impassable. There are big cracks in places and, again, other parts flooded. So that the sense is that even if this relief operation, which the Indonesian government is promising to launch, is got up and running, it's going to be very difficult to get those relief supplies into the province.
And the devastation in Aceh province, caused by the earthquake itself or the tsunamis that were triggered by it?
A combination of the two. It does now seem as if some major structural damage was done by the initial earthquake. That's not the picture that we were given initially, but now I think as we're getting more information, that clearly seems to be the case. Some major buildings have been affected. In Bandar Aceh, the provincial capital, a major hotel there has partially collapsed. We're hearing of other shops that have also collapsed. And again, the road has large cracks in the middle of it. And a number of the casualties, we think, are in the Bandar Aceh region, but also all along the coastal strip which runs around this tip of the province. There are lots and lots of informal fishing communities. Now, that the structures there would have been very simple houses made of wood, some of them wooden houses on stilts, really nothing that could have withstood the power of the water, the floodwaters which hit shortly after the earthquake. So I think the coastal areas were mostly damaged by the floodwaters, and inland where there were more substantial buildings, those buildings seem to have been affected mostly by the initial earthquake.
And have these tsunamis come ashore elsewhere in Indonesia?
Not that we've heard of so far. It does seem to have been pretty much restricted to the northwestern tip of Sumatra. Now, that may be in part because of the geography. The way Indonesia is laid out, it's a bit like a semicircle, like a string of pearls, if you like, with Sumatra on the northwestern tip. And because of the way it curves up, it seems as if it may have borne the brunt of the earthquake and the tsunamis and sheltered some of the other islands to the east.
Aceh province has been the scene recently of civil conflict, a large number of Indonesian soldiers deployed there. Is that going to complicate or facilitate relief efforts, do you think?
I think that's still very much an open question. I think there are two problems here, one practical and one political. The practical problems are clear. The infrastructure has been devastated. Aceh is a province that some areas are very remote, dense jungle in some areas. So it's going to be difficult to facilitate a relief operation from purely practical point of view, but also politically. The Indonesian government has a decision to make now. Will it allow international aid organizations in to help? And the area has been pretty much sealed off for the past 18 months. And also, how is it going to get relief efforts into areas that have been held by the rebels? Is it going to try and go in? Is there going to be some kind of ceasefire called? All these things are very open questions. And I think the government here is really trying to get a sense of the situation on the ground to try and work out what can be done, what needs to be done, and whether it can do the job on its own.
That was our correspondent in Jakarta, Rachel Harvey. Well, tremors from the earthquake off Indonesia were felt several thousand kilometers away on the east coast of southern India, which hours later was struck by the seismic sea waves, the tsunamis. Up to 3,000 people are reported to have been killed in the states of Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu. The Indian Prime Minister, Manmohan Singh, has put Army, Navy and Air Force on full alert.
I have assured them of fullest possible support and cooperation of the central government in meeting with this tragedy. I have also instructed the Defence Minister and the Home Minister to take necessary means for providing adequate relief and rescue. The paramilitary forces as well as our armed forces have been alerted and they are already in operation.
The Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh. Guru Babu is a news editor at the studios of All India Radio in Madras or Chennai. The studios back onto the beach and the city and were flooded by the tidal waves.
The waves hit the morning walkers and surprised them. Basically, most of them who lost their lives were women and children, apparently, who could not get away from the invading floods.
And how high were these waves?
People who saw this wave said it was as high as 30 to 40 feet and crossed the beach and slammed into the houses, catching the people unawares because it was almost early in the morning. Even the fishermen whom I talked to said they were caught unawares. They were on the shore with their catch, and suddenly they see the waves leap and the boats going above their heads. It all happened in a flash.
You say the people were taken by surprise that this
yes.
happened in a flash, but were
yes.
you aware several hours earlier of there being tremors, of there being shaking?
Yeah, in the morning around 6:35 Indian Standard Time, the tremors were felt across the city. And it was a new experience for people in this part of the country because usually tremors are felt only in North India.
You speak of the immediate impact of those massive waves on people who were on the beaches in
yeah.
Chennai, but how much structural damage was there?
Not much of structural damage was there, but in the Indian Port Trust, Chennai, I visited this afternoon, the waves hit the harbour at about 20 nautical miles speed, and most of the ships which were on the bay there were drifting, and even the tug boats could not really bring them back to the harbour. And about 1,500 Hyundai cars which were meant for export, I spoke to the chairman and he said it was all underwater.
Of course, in Chennai itself, most of the structures are quite solidly built, but to the north and south of the city, presumably there are people who earn their living from fishing, and they're not living in such solid buildings.
Yeah. People who lived in good concrete homes were not affected, but the fisher folk who live on the shore, they probably bore the brunt of the whole impact, and most of them who died were the fisher folks and their families, and some of them were also tourists who had come from other states.
And how quick have the authorities been, do you know, to get relief supplies to those that need them?
The authorities started working immediately. In fact, the Prime Minister has sent some of the Cabinet Ministers. The Army, the Navy and the Air Force have immediately swung into action.
And are there concerns still in Chennai that there will be more tremors, there will be more tsunamis?
Yeah, people still are having big fears. Most of these villages along the coast, people have deserted their homes and they do not want to stay near the coast now. And they say they would come back only probably after 40 hours, and they moved down into the mainland, leaving the coastal villages.
There was Guru Babu, news editor at the studios of All India Radio in Madras. Well, closer to Indonesia, the tidal waves also struck neighbouring Malaysia and Thailand. Worst affected were a number of West Coast tourist resorts, just as Phuket, which are packed with foreign visitors during this Christmas season. The Thai authorities say more than 300 people died as waves swamped fishing villages and beach resorts. Kylie Morris visited a hospital in Phuket City.
There's a real mix of injuries. Obviously, there are some very serious cases here, but it would seem that the majority at the moment are mainly minor wounds, injuries, abrasions, the kinds of injuries that people sustained when they were swept out of their hotel rooms or out of their shops into the sea when this huge wave of water came in. But there's also a real sense of shock, I think, amongst people. Many people are ashen-faced. There's a real sense of trauma, that they've been through something horrible that they're still trying to come to terms with.
And where you are is a hospital treating tourists to Phuket City, but not only they have been affected by these tsunamis, by these waves of water.
No, absolutely not. There are a large number of locals, in fact, who are also being treated here, and there are concerns now for both communities, in fact, in terms of the people who are still missing. Among the foreign visitors, there were quite a few divers. I mean, it's a very popular area to come to for diving trips. There are quite a few divers still missing, as we understand it. But also within the Thai community, there are fishermen here. So fishermen who'd set out in their boats for their early morning catch, they were out at sea as this wave came in. Many of them are also missing. So it's a burden that's being shared by both communities here.
And the reaction of many tourists, is it to leave the area?
That's exactly what's happening out at the airport. The people who I spoke to said that they were desperate to get away, that they were happy that they'd escaped with their lives. All they wanted was to get on a plane back to Bangkok and then go home to their countries. There's also, though, a sense among other tourists here that they want to continue their holiday, that they don't want to leave with this memory. One man told me he thought it was important for the Thais that not everyone left. The community will have to recover from this, and if the tourists stay, then perhaps they'll have an easier time doing that.
That was the BBC's Kylie Morris speaking from the island of Phuket in Thailand. You're listening to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. Thousands of people have been killed and whole communities devastated by a huge earthquake which sent tidal waves across a wide area of the Indian Ocean. Many people are spending the night homeless and big relief operations are underway in the worst affected areas of southern India, Sri Lanka and Indonesia. One other headline, Ukrainians have voted in significant numbers in a rerun of last month's presidential election. Exit polls suggest the opposition leader Viktor Yushchenko may have won by a convincing margin, and we'll have more on that later in the programme. The government of Sri Lanka, which lies off the southeast coast of India, has declared a national disaster to help it deal with the devastation caused by the tidal waves. It says more than 4,000 people are believed dead. In some areas on the east coast of the country, the waves travelled more than 2 kilometres inland, sweeping away villages and fishing communities. The government has also launched an international appeal for aid, saying that 1 million people, or 5% of its population, have been affected. The Sri Lankan president, Chandrika Kumaratunga, has cut short a visit to London and returned to her country today. Before she left, she spoke to the BBC's Nick Gowing.
It's a terrible disaster. We were all taken by surprise. It was unexpected, unpredicted. It is the worst disaster the country has suffered, well, for many centuries, in terms of loss of life, injury to humans, loss of property.
What are your officials telling you about the level of devastation and certainly the number of people believed now to be dead?
They say it is nearly 4,000 from the whole country, including the east and the rest of the country, and they expect the numbers to increase as the information comes in. It could be more. We are beginning to handle the situation from morning. I've been on the phone. We have set up a disaster management unit in the Ministry of Defence and in the districts that have been affected. We are short of even helicopters because a lot of places are inaccessible, I'm told. And the Air Force does not have enough helicopters. The Indian government has lent us helicopters and boats. We have appealed to the international community, our friends, and they have come up with massive offers of support. We need support. We even need doctors, medicine, dry rations. They don't have fresh water, but we are sending them fresh water from the unaffected areas. We have to then start building the homes. Anything between 100 and 200,000 homes have been destroyed.
Now, you talk about disaster management units. How would you say your country is ready for this kind of disaster, particularly as a number of military and defense bases have been badly hit themselves?
Not very well prepared, I have to say, because we have not ever had to face this kind of disaster. You know, Sri Lanka is not on any fault line. We have not had any tidal waves or any serious earthquakes. We only have floods from time to time, and we are organized to handle that. You know, we don't have very bad flash floods. So we are not very well organized, and we have to now think of doing this very seriously.
Now, what kind of policy will you have, Madam President, to the rebel-held areas, which have obviously been badly hit as well?
Well, they will be given exactly the same care, the same facilities as much as we can. We have been developing those areas even recently. It's a great pity that some of it would have gone down with the tidal wave. I hope that even at this time, all the opposing forces could get together, because it is a tragic moment of national disaster. I'm certainly going to invite everybody to come and join us in a high-level committee which will coordinate the work for the entire country, for all the affected areas. We will invite all the political parties, groups, even representatives of the LTTE to come. We work with them in development programs, which we have undertaken in the past few years in the rebel-held areas also. Bridges, irrigation tanks, schools, health facilities have been repaired and renovated and newly constructed in the last 4 or 5 years, and especially this year. And we hope we can work together closely on this.
That was the president of Sri Lanka, Chandrika Kumaratunga.
Live from the Public Relations Department of the Royal Thai Government, this is the News Hour.
Sadiqa. Good afternoon and welcome to Radio Thailand's special edition of the Midday News on Monday, December the 27th, 2004. I'm Jane Ritday Cha Wong.
And I'm Gong Ke Fung Fu. Due to the tragic events caused by the massive underwater earthquakes triggering tsunamis which struck 6 countries in South and Southeast Asia, Radio Thailand would like to dedicate this hour to a special coverage of this calamity and suspend our regular news format. During today's program, we will conduct interviews with various experts, officials, and ordinary laymen who will give us further insight into what happened and give us an assessment of the current situation on the ground.
First up in national news, His Majesty the King, King Phumipon Adunyadej, has given 1,000 life-saving kits comprising of clothing, consumer goods, and dry food to victims of the tsunamis at the Takwapa, Phanga province, while 500 life-saving kits will be given to those in Krabi and Phuket. Meanwhile, to help victims of the tsunami attacks, the Thai Red Cross Society has sent 203 units of blood to the Red Cross office in Thung Song District, Nakhon Si Thammarat, 80 units to Takwapa Hospital, and 8 units to Surat Thani Hospital. However, the supply of blood does not meet the demand of people down south. Therefore, the Thai Red Cross Society invites people to donate their blood at the Thai Red Cross Society at Ongri Dunan Road from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m.
Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat convenes a meeting of related officials to provide emergency help to people and tourists in the south. Prime Minister Thaksin flew on the helicopter to inspect areas around Phuket and the Takwapa district of Phanga province last night. He also instructed officials to quickly search for missing people and requested telephone networks across the country to facilitate communications in the areas. We now turn to our special coverage of the catastrophe in the south. The latest numbers indicate over 461 dead and over 4,000 injured due to the calamity that which has struck the south.
Due to the earthquake in Indonesia that resulted in destruction and loss in many areas in southern Thailand, Thai Airways International Public Company Limited has provided natural disaster support by transporting doctors and nurses as well as medical equipment to Phuket. Live via the phone is Mr. Kanok Apiradi, Thai International President. He said that due to the natural disaster in southern Thailand, Thai transported more of the relief team to Phuket that included doctors and nurses as well as medical equipment to be used in the disaster relief.
About 400 people have been announced dead and around 5,000 are wounded after at least 3 tsunamis lashed the south part of Thailand and swept their way across Asia. Thai Foreign Affairs Ministry has been doing everything in its means to help both foreign victims in Thailand and Thai nationals in countries hit by the tsunami. Right now, we have with Radio Thailand the Permanent Secretary of Foreign Affairs Ministry, Mr. Pisan Watanatwongkiri, who will talk about the ministry's plan towards the various emergency measures being taken to assist victims and related parties in dealing with the calamity in the south.
So good afternoon, Mr. Pisan.
Yes, good afternoon to you.
Could you elaborate more on how the government has been helping foreign tourists affected by the catastrophe at this moment?
Yes, as of yesterday, 4 p.m. in the afternoon, the foreign ministry has set up a 24-hour coordinating center for foreign nationals affected by the waves to coordinate relief efforts for those nationals killed, trapped, injured, and unaccounted for in these affected areas. We have the telephone numbers given on our website, distributed by all TV channels. We have put it the latest on our website. And yesterday evening, we, with good cooperation from Thai Airways International, we have transported some 44 diplomats from 27 embassies together with our small team led by the Deputy Director General of Protocol to Phuket. We have been in touch with the Dawlish International School, who had been kind enough to put them up tonight during their stay in Phuket. These diplomats will be working closely with our team, with the local Thai authorities, with the rescue workers in the area, to render all kind of assistance to their respective nationals. And this is important because not all tourists can speak English, and a lot of help is being sought by governors and provincial Thai authorities. This another team of 12 young diplomats will be dispatched to strengthen our team to dispatch to other provinces in the area tonight. And this afternoon, we are calling, we are convening a meeting among the embassies based in Bangkok to update each other on news and information, because we have received a generous offer of assistance from various countries and government. We have received messages from heads of state and heads of government, and we are coordinating closely with the Interior Ministry, with the local authority on the exact assistance needed, so that we could send in and coordinate with the friendly governments as soon as possible. We have more or less identified that the type of assistance needed would be the search and rescue team, would be aircraft, would be medical personnel, forensic experts, even body bags, because we were told that the health public health ministry has dispatched some body bags, but they are not big enough for some of our foreign victims. So the food, medical supply, first aid, search and rescue team, all these would be welcomed. So we will be convening, consulting with our representatives from various embassies at 4 o'clock this afternoon. This consultative meeting would be chaired by PERM Secretary Grit Kanchana Kunchorn. And the picture will become clearer. At the moment, there have been some government approaching us to dispatch aircraft to airlift their national, their citizens back to their countries, and we are arranging it. We are rendering possible assistance and coordination with them.
We were talking about the Thai government assisting the foreign tourists affected by the catastrophe. How about the Thais residing in other countries affected by the tsunamis?
Thank you very much for this question. This is even more important for the people in Thailand whose loved ones are working or visiting or on holiday in those affected areas. We have been in touch with all our embassies in the area, and we have received report from our ambassador in Delhi that in Chennai all Thai workers are safe, in Penang, in Indonesia, in KL. We have received no report of casualties. The only place that we are concerned because of lack of information, and we are trying our best, is in Maldives, because we receive information from relatives who make a phone call to our center that they have relatives on holiday in Maldives, and the number is small, but we are concerned for their safety. 5 to 6 Thai holiday makers have been trapped in Maldives, and we are contacting the local authority. As you may know, that two-thirds of the areas of Maldives have been flooded underwater, and we are still making efforts to get in touch with the local authority in order to identify the well-being, the safety, the whereabouts of these Thai citizens.
Before we continue, Radio Thailand would like to apologize and make a correction. The Permanent Secretary of Foreign Affairs Ministry who is joining us now is Khun Pisan Manapwapat and not the Pisan Watanawongkiri, which was earlier stated. Going to the next question, how, for the Thai relatives and friends of the Thai nationals who were residing abroad when the tsunami hit, should they contact the Ministry of Foreign Affairs?
Yes, if I could give the youth through you to them the number right
sure,
now.
Sure.
Our 24-hour coordinating center has different numbers, and they are 662, the area code for Thailand and Bangkok, followed by 643-5262,
mm-hmm.
644-7245, 644-7249, and we also have the extension number of our main line, 643-5000. That is the main line, and the extension is 5002-5503-5055 and 5056. We have young officers manning all these numbers 24 hours, and they are ready. They worked through the night last night. I know that they have been exhausted. We have a new team replacing them. Hundreds of calls have been noted with their information and details, and this is the least we can do for those whose loved one has been missing, and then we would like to thank all those who have called in with good understanding, with good manner, and we just pray that their loved one will be safe.
Mm-hmm. Do you have certain estimates of the numbers of Thais residing or vacationing abroad in Indonesia, etc.?
Not at the moment. Mm-hmm. As you know, the holiday makers can go to our ASEAN countries without visa.
Right.
And normally they do not have to, or they don't notify embassies when they are on holiday. What we could do is to get in touch with our embassy, with our honorary consul generals, and try to work with the local authority.
Mm-hmm.
The only place we know for sure that there are 5 to 6 Thai holiday makers visiting this Maldives, because we have relatives calling us, and we are working with the local authority trying to find their whereabouts and their well-being.
Mm-hmm. And as we have said before, if the relatives and friends of Thai tourists can contact the foreign embassy, for relatives and friends of foreign tourists in Thailand, should they contact their...
Same center.
Same center, okay.
We are coordinating with their embassy representative closely. We have 47 people with us in Phuket. We will have a consultative meeting with their ambassador's representative at 4 o'clock tonight. Mm-hmm. We are asking them who else would like to go. If there are enough people, then we will seek cooperation with Thai Airways International to transport some more. Some ambassadors have been making their own way from Bangkok to the Phuket area since yesterday. So we are helping them at our center in the governor office in Phuket.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Khun Pisan, for joining us today and giving us all that information.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you. And that was the Permanent Secretary of Foreign Affairs Ministry, Khun Pisan Manapwapat.
Next, we have with us now Khun Wichit Naranong, Managing Director of Pearl Village Hotel in Nayang Beach, who will tell us about his experience on what happened on the beach when the tsunami hit and what the current situation is like at the beach. Sawasdee ka, Khun Wichit.
Sawasdee ka.
Right. My first question is, what happened when the waves hit?
Right. Were you there? Were you there in the?
What did
as
you
it
see?
Happened?
Yeah. I was seeing it because first of all, in the after the feel of the quake for about 1.5 hours, we just evidence the water is coming to the gate on the beach side. And then I went down to see that what happened, which is very unusual, that sea water coming out up to the gate. So then we keep watching there for maybe 10 or 15 minutes. And the second and third one coming, which is more water and coming into the hotel property. Then the last one, which is the largest one, coming afterwards. And this one have a very strong force. And then they just wipe all the shack and the shop on the along the beach side and in front there, and then through the hotel boundary. But the water is not very, not a total wave coming into the hotel, but they gradually like they have a lot of water coming in into the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And then because the hotel it's quite a large area, it's about 30 acres, so the water is kind of seeping through the lawn and then the canal that we have on both sides of the hotel up to the almost coffee shop, which is the highest level.
So how far is Pearl Village Hotel away from the beach?
Actually, the gate would be about 20 meters, the gate. But the property itself is set back like a U-shape into about another couple of hundred meters there.
So you actually saw the water coming into the hotel?
Oh, yes, the water is coming very rapidly, and then it's building up the height from 10 centimeter, 20, 30, up to the highest level, about 1 meter.
Mm-hmm.
Did you tell your...
And it will stay there. It was staying there for about 10 minutes, and it just start gradually return back to the sea.
So it wasn't a sudden wave coming in, it was more like a gradual increase in the water level, right?
Rather than the sudden throw of the wave into the hotel, because we are quite a distance, you know. And then because of the Nanyang Beach, it's a beach which is sheltered by the coral reef and all that, and then it's not directly facing the open sea.
Mm-hmm.
It's located, of course, on the west coast, but it's not facing the direction of the wave coming in.
Right.
So that's why the effect is quite moderate.
How did you yourself escape the coming water? How did you yourself escape? Did you run up the hotel floors to the? How did you escape the water coming?
We just watching at the gate there and see the water keep coming up, and then we just running after before the water, and then to the higher elevation on the coffee shop. And then watching the level of the water coming up.
So did you have time to warn the guests about what was happening then?
Well, we don't even have any warning from anybody, you know, because in the morning about almost 8 o'clock, we feel shaking from the earthquake. We thought that it's just very normal, because after all, you know, we feel this from time to time. And this is very minor, nothing at all. So we didn't realize that it was a big quake somewhere else far below. So that's why there's no warning whatsoever. But the only thing that we have noticed, the unusual situation, is the seawater coming to the gate of the hotel, which has never happened. So that's why we rushed to see that what happened. Then after we watching for about 10, 15 minutes, then the second and the third one coming.
A lot of people have regarded December as one of the sort of the high season.
It's a peak season.
Would this tsunami affect the hotel industry, tourism industry down south?
Yes, of course, it certainly affects. But
how much?
Is now how to restore it back to the normal situation as soon as possible, and then of course that. Various beaches have various different degrees of effect, and then some of them are not affected at all for those who are located at a higher elevation. But the only thing that now what we have to do is, especially the government, that they have to restore the public area, especially the beach, which you have to clean all the rubbish as far as possible, so that people can go back to the normal swimming. And then all some of the infrastructure which has been destroyed that have to be restored. But there are certain areas that need to be done like that. But most importantly, that the hotel, I believe that everyone now they're trying to restore the facilities within the hotels as quick as possible, especially for us now at the Pearl Village at the Nai Yang Beach. We anticipate that we could put everything back to normal operation within 3 days.
So it takes 3 more days to go back to more normal.
Yeah, but at the moment we operate normally anyway, because that, of course, the ground are not very clean, all the outlet are operation as normal. Majority of the guest room, about 70%, which is not wet, we operate as normal. We still keep the guests in house about 70% at the moment. So in next 3 days, all the, our compound, and especially the beach area, that we are going to make a big cleaning today, and then put facilities there like a deck chair, the clubs and everything back, so that the people can enjoy their normal swimming. Of course, the swimming pool will take a bit longer because it's a lot of dirt inside. We have to go through all the filtering system.
Right. So
this is all about, because on the guest room itself, actually, the carpet was wet.
Right.
Besides that, we don't have anything, so we decided to change completely to install the new carpet, so we don't have to wash or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that one would be the fastest way to restore the property back to normal.
All right. Well, right. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much for joining us and giving us a first-hand account of what's happening.
In 3 days, everything will go back to normal. There'll be loads of tourists down south again.
We hope so.